F2. Number 28B.
Well, we were considering what Mrs. Eddy thought and wrote about this question. See that she expressed the view that, to her sense, our blessed Master did not have the signs of it. That is, did not give the premise, the conclusion, and the logical reasoning as this is, you see. The premise, the conclusion, and the reasoning from premise to conclusion. That's that, the science of it. That he didn't give that. He really taught in parables, and not like Paul already, he began to reason things out with the church. That's one of the big differences, I think, which you feel between the Gospels and the Epistles. The Epistles reason with the reader. They reason things out. And Paul would say, well, first it was so, and then what were my conclusions about it, and I saw those conclusions weren't any good, so I had to find another cause. Now I found another cause, and if I have this other cause, then I get another effect of it, and so on. He was reasoning with them. You see, that's perhaps why when you began to study the epistles, it was a bit difficult at first, because he was reasoning. He was no more like the gospel just presenting what has happened. So Mrs. Eddy, too, really when speaking of herself, says more or less the same what she said of Jesus, that when she began to see the light and had a revelation and were writing her textbook, that she really didn't see the signs of it at first. See, she said that the Word of God, which Jesus explained to his disciples, she says, has since ripened into interpretation through science. But then she says, what she wrote about signs and health with key to the scripture came to her as revelation, and that she would blush to say that he wrote it. She said, no, it was God that wrote it. And she said that she little understood of what she had written down. You remember those passages in Paul's work. And that she says of herself that she was learning the higher meaning of the textbook out of the textbook. So, let's just see, there is not a question of belittling any one of these revelators. Of belittling Abraham, or of belittling Moses, or of belittling the prophets, or of belittling Jesus, or of belittling Paul, and so on, and of belittling Mrs. Eddy. All they just did what? Something much higher than they was dictating to them. They did what science, God, told them to write. See? And so science told the old patriarchs to write about the Word. But one can only write about the Word when it takes in something of the Christ and of Christianity and science. And it was science that told the prophets to write about the Christ. But we can't write about the Christ without writing something about the Word also and about Christianity and science also. And so it was with the epistles, and so it was with the textbook. The science told Mrs. Eddy to write about the science and health, write about the science, but science interprets the Word and the Christ and Christianity, so the textbook is full of all the foresight of the Holy City. You see, when we see that, and this is important to see, that something higher than the authors of the book is writing, then we answer all those many questions which come up today, which say, Well, you people, you say something about textbook and about the Bible as a science. We don't believe you. If it would be so, as you say, why hasn't Mrs. Eddy said so? Why hasn't she said so? Why hasn't she said you must study the synonyms? Why hasn't she said that reality is based on the 7 and the 4? Why hasn't she said so? And that was the answer that they received from headquarters. We have gone through all the archives and have nowhere found that Mrs. Eddy Wood said so. And so because Mrs. Eddy would not say so, it is not true. Well, Mrs. Eddy was writing science. And science interprets itself eternally. And so science uses all the patriarchs and the prophets and the apostles and Mrs. Eddy, and will use anyone who will let himself be used. Mrs. Eddy naturally said what she is saying, because we tried to prove everything through her writings and through the Bible. But if one doesn't have, I'll come back to that point, if one doesn't have a consciousness of science, one cannot see it. If one has a consciousness of science, one sees what we are teaching on every line in the textbook. And we say, oh yes, Mrs. Eddy says so, it's in the textbook. It's there, exactly there, you can't mistake it. But if one doesn't have that scientific consciousness, one just doesn't see it. One just reads words with a theological view, with a human mind, with a sentimental mind, with a religious mind, or whatever it is, but not with a scientific mind. If you read the textbook with a scientific mind, you just can't help seeing that everything she says is built up in the 7. That every chapter in the textbook is built up in the 7. That the whole textbook is built up in the 4 times 4, 16 chapters. We just can't help seeing it. It's the consciousness that matters. The consciousness which reads the pages. And so there is always, with these holy writings, with these sacred writings, always a great mystery combined with it, because they always hide much more than what is seen at the first glance. They hide so much of the truth that the reader can only touch a little bit at first, and only as consciousness is purified and purified, it begins to unveil that mystery and becomes clearer and clearer and clearer. About 10 years ago, I gave a week's talk like this on the Christian Science textbook in London. And in that class was a lady who was well acquainted with a friend of Laura Sargent, who lived with Mrs. Eddy. And she had, from earlier times in her notebook, that the following little paragraph, which I would like you to read. A little paragraph which is most interesting. A little paragraph which we must take with all, well, you know how things are when they are written down in a notebook and handed over to someone else with a, what you say, with a pinch of salt or so? Yeah, with a grain of salt. Anyway, in that notebook, she says, when Mrs. Eddy completed the final edition of Science and Health, you know, and she makes quite a point out of it, Mrs. Eddy, in her textbook, in the preface, that at a certain date in June, I think, 1907, that then at the first time she read Science and Health through consecutively in order to elucidate her idealism. Her idealism was science. And at that time, Laura Sargent wrote down these things, that when Mrs. Eddy completed the final edition of Science and Health, she said to her friend, "There, Laura, I have put my discovery out into mortal mind, and I have hidden it and hidden it and hidden it. And if I hide it any more, my discovery will be lost." So that note says exactly the opposite of what people ask us and say, why didn't Mrs. Eddy say so? Well, Mrs. Eddy was an inspired writer, an agent in the hand of God, and God all through the ages always hid the revelation so that only those who were able to perceive it could perceive it. God is not human. The human mind says, let's give it out, let's share it, let's show it, let's have it right in the open. The divine mind works differently. The divine mind knows that only that which is divine minded can perceive the divine mind. So that only that which is divinely, scientifically minded can perceive the divine science. And so she put it out to mortal mind because she knew that it was theological mind that would read it, that it was sentimental mind that would read it, that it would be all sorts of the human mind that would read it, and that couldn't grasp the signs of it. To that mind it was hidden, hidden, hidden. But just as the Bible was hidden and is revealed in the same measure, what Mrs. Eddy wrote will be revealed. And we think, because we have the unchangeable letter in her textbook, that that is the end. Well, textually, it's complete. Textually, it contains the whole science. But the revelation of that text goes on. That text reveals itself to the reader and to the reader in an ever higher measure. First, the reader may just see in it the higher sense of God, perhaps just the purer sense of God, of God that loves instead of loves and hates. Perhaps the human mind will first see in that page just the saving power of the Christ, the healer, the new physician, the new medicine. Well, little by little, as consciousness is purified, we will always see more and more in that same text. Just as in the same text of the epistles, we begin to see the structure of science, the structure of the science of Christianity, which enables us to understand those epistles in a much higher way, in a much more definite way, in a much more practical way than we could understand it without the science of the epistles. The theologians, when you read the commentaries on the epistles, especially on the epistles, they will tell you all sorts of stories about those epistles. They will just tell us that Paul was writing in a big muddle. That every commentary says the same thing. That Paul's writing is just impossible for a logical mind. That he takes up a subject, they say, and then drops it, and then babbles on another subject, and then after a few chapters takes up the subject again, and writes on it, and drops it again, and so on. And they say he was the most unsystematic writer one can think of. He was inspired, they give credit to him in that way, that he was a fine man, that he was a Christian, that he was courageous, that he was bold, but he was an unsystematic writer. Was he? Was he? He was. We just see that his epistles are just built up point by point along the way of that divine logic, of that logic which can only reason in divine terms, in divine tones, not in human words and in human symbols. Paul reasons in divine tones, the tone of mind, the tone of spirit, the tone of soul, you see, and blends them. That's why we have in Romans the 7x7, in 1 Corinthians the 7x7, such a regular pattern. One can't think of any more regular pattern than those epistles which Paul wrote. And then theology comes with their lens of consciousness, with their lens of consciousness, which has nothing in mind but human symbols and morals and ethics and I don't know what. Naturally, they can't read it. It just doesn't make sense to them. Can you see how the same text becomes something different according to the consciousness which we have and which we approach it? So, if we want to approach it in the highest sense, well, the highest sense is science. Science which interprets the word, the Christ, and Christianity. Science which includes the word, science, and Christianity. So, if we approach those books with a divinely scientific consciousness, a consciousness which has been trained through years and years and years in the tone of mind, in the tone of spirit, in the tone of soul, in the tone of principle and of life and truth and love, that knows all the shadings of mind as mind, the mind as spirit, mind as soul, mind as principle, mind as life, mind as truth, mind as love, who knows all the shadings about spirit as mind, spirit as soul, who knows the shading between the tones, what mind as spirit is and spirit as mind is, that mind as spirit isn't at all the same as spirit as mind. If with that consciousness we touch that text, you see, then it falls into place. Everything falls then into place. Just as if we had, say, a lot of chemical elements on a heap, well, the chemist would come with his periodical, what is the expression, the periodical system of chemistry. Is anyone here who knows? We call it the periodical system of chemistry, namely that system wherein all the 92 or 93 elements are placed within the system, you see. If such a consciousness of knowing the science of chemistry touches that heap, well then he can analyze it and he can place everything within the system, and then he has all the elements all the chemical elements nicely laid out, and then it makes sense. Then we know how these elements are combined to each other and where they are. That's what we do with the Bible and the textbook. Can you see that? So it yields really its treasures. So let's see. You see that our study is of that kind. See, you make a home, and you have a great subject in front of you. Perhaps you have felt the sense, oh, I would like to go deeper into it, I would like to culture that thing. And in order to do that, I want to read the Bible again, the textbook again, with a deeper sense. Well, let's remember, you see, that when we study, that we don't just come home from business or from washing up or I don't know what, and just open the book and just start in. We bring the whole world consciousness in to that book, and it can't understand it. Can't understand. Therefore, the Christian Science textbook starts with prayer. So, I always made it a rule to myself, which I sometimes break, but whenever I break it, it's my fault. But I have made quite a big rule all through those many, many, many years that I just wouldn't study anything, the textbook or the Bible, without first praying about the consciousness with which I touched those two holy books. That ground is holy. We have to take off the shoes before we tread on it and leave everything which is of the nature of human will and of human desire and of human thinking and out of our consciousness. And so I always like to therefore to approach a study through obstetrics, through the passage on obstetrics, where we just know that teacher and student should know the science of obstetrics. namely, that we detach mortal thoughts completely from any material concept, that we first fill our consciousness with the mind of science, with the mind of Christ, where we see that we have the mind of Christ, and that mind of Christ is that mind of Christ in which the Spirit interprets itself to my spiritual sense, where soul identifies itself, everything definitely to my spiritual sense, and so where principle interprets itself to my spiritual sense. See, then, if you first do that, if you really first pray, not beg, but pray in a scientific way, where we know that we have the mind of Christ, that we have the Spirit of God within our hearts, that we have the spiritual sense of soul within our hearts, then, if we approach a subject that way, then there is a chance that we are transparent for the Christ to speak through us and reveal what is in the pages, and reveal that which is behind paper and printing ink, behind the human symbolization in the form of language. So, I just want to point that out, because I feel if we don't have the key for study, well, we can hardly open the whole realm of reality. And you see also, when one reads Mrs. Eddy's writing, that she says, well, how can you advance most rapidly in the understanding of Christian Science, that she says, that she gives an order there and says, study thoroughly the letter, then imbibe the Spirit, then afterwards abide by it. And so she goes on in that paragraph. But if we have the beginning right, that's the best thing we can do. See, it's starting with the letter. It's starting with the letter. Now, this week, we didn't do much about the letter. This week I tried to show the birth of the new idea, to give you the sense that there is a spirit about this system, about this science. But let's see that we get the balanced sense of our study. Namely, the balanced sense that we don't now go into the other extreme and just feel, well, the letter is not so important, all that matters is the Spirit, all that matters now is the pondering. See, if I would leave you with that impression, then I would leave you in a real mess, really. And then that the summer school would have not fulfilled its purpose. It only fulfills its purpose if we maintain the balance within our study. And what is needed today more is the exact letter. That's what is needed very, very much more. It's the exact letter. I feel that you have the ability to evolve the Spirit now. But what is missing is the letter. You see, if we just have the sense that it's the Spirit that matters, and then what do you do? It is that one begins to think and ponder and feel about that which one already knows. But if that which one already knows is disordered and not yet clear and not yet systematized, you think and ponder about disordered things, about unsystematic truths, and that doesn't lead anywhere. So, I must put now a bit more stress at the end of the summer school again on the study of the letter. It's so important, see, that one is first clear about the object of our worship, the object of our pondering. If we don't have an absolute standard, which is completely objective, completely independent of what we think about God, if we have a standard of the ideas of the world, the ideas of mind and spirit and soul and principle and life and truth and love, as God knows it, then, only then, we can make that objective sense of God subjective. Then we can, through spirit, ponder them, worship them, love them, wonder about them, concentrate on them, focus our whole being on them. Then we make something which is real, which is divine, subjective. The other way, you will just have a unsystematic, unordered, and therefore untrue sense about God, and never God dwelling within us. So, I wanted to stress that so as not to be misunderstood, that you get the feeling I did away with the letter, I did away with the study. No. I think, feeling the situation as I feel it now, it is that more of the letter should be cultured. Clear, clean, objective, so that you have your tools. Then, when you have your tools, ponder them, imbibe the spirit. Then, as imbibe the spirit, adhere to it, she goes on, adhere to it. And in that way, everything will become simpler, 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 simpler in your consciousness. Then that falls away where you are so full of thousand questions, thinking, what is the answer to this? What is the answer to that? What is the answer to this question? What is the answer to that? Then the only answer you always have is the answer, what is mind? What is spirit? What is soul? What is principle? And so, what is the world? What is the Christ? What is Christianity? What is science? And then, little by little, that structure grows within us, becomes subjective, and that becomes us. So that man becomes the structure of this wonderful system of science. So let's have the textbook and the Bible as our only teacher. All the books we write, I write, and so on, they are not textbooks. They should not in any way detract our thoughts from the textbook. That's always the danger when one writes a book like this book or the book on the minor prophets, that it detracts, so to say, the student from digging into the textbook and into the Bible itself. These books which we write are more or less only illustrations to illustrate that the science is in the Bible, that the science is in the textbook. They only should prove to consciousness that the science is to be found in the textbook, not in our book which we write. It's a bugle call, perhaps. It's the waking up to consciousness. So, just stick to your textbook, then we are safe. Somebody pointed out yesterday to me a sentence which I wrote in this book, which really isn't right as it is written. I meant it right, and they understood it as right, but as it is written in it, it's not right. It's not confirming what the textbook says. Well, these things happen. I mean, you just can't help it that just when you write books, sometimes I weigh every sentence as good as I can, but when it goes through the editors and through everything, well, it only usually needs a little word that needs to be changed, and it's no more science. It's no more what Mrs. Eddy really says, you see. So the safety of us is that we may have read these books which we write as a help. For what? To go to the textbook. To go to the Bible. Let that be our teacher. If we let those books teach us, year in and year out, we are safe.